Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Tyler Shields, the co-host of Cyber Therapy. My general co-host, Ashley Lee, will not be with us. She's on PTO this week. So to do something unique and something a little bit interesting, I decided to bring a friend. We're doing a crossover episode today, which, quite frankly, I was trying to think of before in our show prep, we were trying to think of the coolest crossovers in history. And the best I could, and actually, I don't even think I came up with
it. I don't think you suggested one.
No, I didn't suggest any.
I'm sorry, by the way.
I'll introduce you in a second. But for the coolest crossovers, we could come up with were the Flintstones and Jetsons, which I totally recognized.
Okay. Then I felt pretty lame suggesting that, but.
No, that was a good one. What was the second one? What was the second one we suggested?
Oh, it was, this one was from other Tyler. It was Hannah Montana, Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, and Hannah Montana. Which I also agree with that one.
I agree with that one too, but I probably would have seen it. But the problem with Tyler Peterson suggesting it is that my kids probably watched it. So I definitely felt very old when he said that was a cool one.
I mean, here's the thing. I've seen both crossover episodes, so maybe I'm just older with like weird taste in younger shows, but they're...
Let's not go there, Carter, because I think we could take that down a rat hole about your weird tastes. But I do want to introduce you to the Cyber Therapy crowd. So Carter is on the development team. He's one of the leaders on the development team at Jupiter One. He does a lot of front end work. He is a musician. He is a all around pretty amazing guy. And my favorite part about him is that I convinced him a while back to be the lead host of 100X Engineering, which is thus why it's a crossover show for us today. So what else do I need to know about you there? Yes, 100X Therapy.
100X John. Therapy. I'm here for it.
Absolutely. This is our crossover episode. What else do we need to know? What else should we tell the audience about you, Carter?
Other things about me, if I'm worried I'm going to talk over somebody when I'm like, they're telling me, like bearing their soul to me in like a one-on-one, I usually try and bring food to that and eat so I don't talk over people. And then if I'm worried I'm going to... you know, tune out like Tyler, I'm not listening. I'm going to go back to my Slack now or play Minecraft on my computer, something like that. I actually pick locks. I have a lock picking set on my desk that I do whilst talking to people because I am not a grown up and I can't focus or be trusting myself to.
I presume you know that lock picking is a very common thing in the cybersecurity universe. When did you pick it up? Were you already introduced to it prior to, you know, joining Jupiter One and focusing on cybersecurity development, or was that something you picked up later?
It was so this hails back to when I was 14. It was a stormy afternoon. My family had an emergency. I was left home alone in the basement, scared, not sure what was going on.
So were you locked up down there in a pit?
No, it was just where my bedroom was. So that sounds. I have to paint the picture though. Like you got to imagine this dejected, like emotional 14-year-old. And I decided to hop on our 2x2 internet, which I found out later was a pyramid scheme. and searched on like Yahoo how to pick locks because I couldn't get into my dad's office where the Nintendo was. And so, Dad, if you're watching this, I'm sorry.
Were you successful at 14 in picking that lock?
Oh, yeah. You bet I was. I played the crap out of Mario 64 that day. So... that's where it started. It's gone up and down. I used it. I lived out of state for a while and had like a couple like amateur locksmith things. I'm not super good at it, but I picked it up again recently. In like the past few months, I discovered a subreddit that has like a ranking system and you kind of compete against other people. So I've gotten pretty into that.
That's pretty wicked. And it is a small world because I too have lock picks in my nightstand and I have a master lock with the keys on the lock. So there's no way to unlock it unless I can remember how to pick it. And it's been in there for probably a decade since I've last picked it. So it's been a hot minute since I've tried, but I used to do it too, way back in the day.
I'm like tempted to like go and like make jokes about like uses for lock picks in your nightstand and like, but like I'm going to not explore that thread too
far. Let's not explore that topic. However, tell us a little bit about for those since we are doing a crossover episode. Presumably the two people that are watching concurrently, I'm joking, there's a little bit more than that. But for the small number of people that are watching our cyber therapy show concurrently, they may or may not have seen 100X. Can you tell us a little bit about 100X Engineering and what you guys do over there?
Absolutely. 100X Engineering is the show where you learn the skills, precepts, principles, jokes, and gaming skills necessary in order to be not a 1X, 10X, 11X, but 100X engineer. We do this by interviewing people around the engineering industry. They can be engineers, they can be adjacent engineers, on various topics, not about the tech, but more about the meta around the tech of how do I succeed in this game that is the engineering industry.
My God, you have such a good pitch. If you had asked me that same question, I'd have been like, I don't know. I bring on cool people and talk.
That was procedurally generated, actually. I'm like, I mean, I kind of ran with it, but it felt good. It was kind of flowing.
That was really freaking on point. But the thing that caught my ear is you mentioned a handful of times games.
Oh, yes.
So what's the format of your show? Our format is, you know, talk show, fun little game at the end. But you guys do something a little fresher, a little different.
Yeah. The original pitch for this started actually with like, I think we had a conversation back in Raleigh at like an on-site or something. I was like, we were talking about like streaming this on Twitch and stuff. And they're like, Carter, what would you watch? I was like, I would love to watch my CEO play Minecraft, like Minecraft and managers. That's what I want to call it. Just, you know, dump buckets of lava on him or push him into the water or something like that while he's trying to explain like shareholder value, pre-sales numbers. I don't know. the seed was that from that kind of mentality, it was born of we'll bring people onto the show. I've got to find people that are comfortable. If they're comfortable playing a game with us, then they're probably going to be comfortable having a show where we ask them silly questions and stuff. But it's not just like games. We're not playing like Halo or Fortnite or Call of Duty. We're playing off-brand Sonic, off-brand Mario, Rento, not Monopoly because that's licensed.
Rento, that's games. A game.
Which one?
Rento.
Rento was really bad. It was borderline too bad. Yeah, we've got off-brand Sonic coming up on next week's episode.
So that sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. Sonic was one of my favorite games.
It's really bad, but it's amazing.
So, you know, it's funny. We started Cybertherapy a handful of weeks or months, I don't remember, before 100X came around. And we convinced you to come on board. And I think you've enjoyed the ride. I think it's been fun ride as a co-host, right? It's kind of a cool thing you get to do once a week. And, you know, hopefully not sick too much prep into it, but you get to have a good time, get to talk to some cool people. And the really cool thing about it is we started first and you've gotten bigger, which is pretty freaking awesome. You should
poppycock. That's not real.
I've seen the numbers, man. I've seen the numbers. Your numbers are better than Cybertherapy's numbers. So, you know, when I heard the opportunity to do a crossover episode, I'm like, wait, we get to get that big wig on our show? Let's go all day long. And not only that, I'm going to steal your format is what I said. I'm going to steal the format of 100X.
Happily let you steal the format.
Let's do some gaming on Cybertherapy. Let's do something fresh here. Let's do something new. Since Ashley's not around, I don't have to follow her stupid little rules that she makes me follow. And we'll do something cool and fun. So it turns out we're both chess players, right?
It turns out you're a chess player, and I am a person who has played chess. Make no mistake. Hopefully our 2.4 million viewers that have migrated from 100X Engineering can help me beat Tyler in chess. Are we good to introduce the game that we're playing?
I think, unless you want to run any more background stuff, I think we can.
I'll make it go away. I can make it go away.
You can bring it back too. Like you have
power. You know, I'll just flex my power.
I'm good at starting the conversation and playing at the same time. The funny thing is during the show prep, Carter challenged me on chess.com and it actually rejected him because his rating is not high enough to compete.
It asked me if I wanted to join the Wood League. I don't think it goes lower than the Wood League.
Now, that being said, for those listeners that are real chess players, I am not good. I'm like a 1400 rating, not very good at all. But apparently Carter's way worse.
Yeah, so, he refuses to play with you unless your rating's higher than 1338. So weird flex number one.
I don't want to get crushed.
I know.
All right, so open up our game. Let's get that game going. We've set the game to 7 days per turn, so we have tons of time to actually talk and chat as we're playing chess. Oh, this is going to be weird because I'm actually looking at the screen because it's your screen. It's going to turn me off.
You can see all my moves before I make them. It's really not fair.
Yeah.
You see what I'm toying around with. I understand how chess works. To our viewers, please – if you have a move that you would suggest to me, please, I would love to crowdsource my failure.
Oh, he's going to crowdsource and try to win. What a dirty
crowdsource
dirty
that he has a cushion for when I lose.
I have to admit, I am having trouble finding you at the moment because the game that I have does not have
Here, I'll drop a link in our private chat here.
Okay.
But while you're doing that, I'm actually curious. So, like, I explained a little bit about, like, the origins of 100X, of, like, this borderline, you know, just kind of troll thing that started in. How did cyber therapy start, though? I don't know what the origins of that were. I just assumed in the beginning there was cyber therapy, and cyber therapy was there.
You make it sound like it's a Bible thing. In the beginning,
there was. And on the seventh day, God created cyber therapy.
Hang on. You know, it's funny. One of the things I admire about your show over mine is quite literally, you guys actually have the ability to multitask. I struggle horribly at that.
You know, that's not true, actually. We don't multitask. It's just Drew and I have this ability to bounce back and forth. So while he's asking the questions, I'm actually not listening to anything anybody's saying. I'm
kind of like right now, because again, I have that same game up and I don't see your move. Did you make a move? Oh, you got to hit the little check mark, man. You got to submit your move.
Some of us have a ranking of 24, so you might have to be patient. I'm disappointed in our viewers for not pointing that out first, actually.
That's okay. I still don't
see it. I'm never disappointed in you all.
I still don't see your move. Your move's not coming through, man. Wait a minute. I got two games from you here. Maybe one moved. Yep. Okay. I got you now.
All right.
To answer your question before I make my move, where did we come up with cyber therapy? Cyber therapy. Ashley and I were kicking around ideas. We knew we wanted to do something podcast related. We knew we wanted to do some content, some fresh content. And quite frankly, I have always wanted to do a live show. And so when we kicked this thing around, we came up with this idea of cyber therapy. Ashley really likes talking about the human side of. Gosh, this is so hard to concentrate. You have no idea.
I'm hoping that I can use my advantage of having played and talked before against you.
Ashley really likes talking about the human aspects of. I can't do this. Talking about the human aspects of cybersecurity and the people behind it. I have a tendency to get into the nerds a little bit further than her, faster than her. Get down in the weeds, not the nerds. I can't even think straight.
I wasn't going to say it. I was like, I haven't heard that phrase before.
God, I'm struggling to think and play chess at the same time. This is a horrible experience for me. Okay. She likes to talk about the human side of it. Oh, man. See, my problem is, too, you don't get to see this, but I have like 20 different chess games going with day-to-day chess games. So literally every time I make a move, it goes to a new game and I have to click back to your game.
Oh,
and
no.
That's like causing me double damage and throwing me off even more.
So it's you're making suboptimal moves against your non-Wood League friends.
Exactly.
That you're playing chess with.
Okay.
So we came up
with this idea of, let's just get a few cool people on and start talking about what makes them tick and the why behind cybersecurity and the why behind how and why some of these friends of mine got into cybersecurity. And so we got some of my old buddies from previous worlds and lives to come on, and that's where it started from. And I think we're on episode 25. This is 21. This is episode 21.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And at some point I think we might even up the episode count a little bit here and try to put out a little bit more content for the audience, because we are starting to get some pretty good followership. So that's a lot of fun, quite frankly.
I think that's super cool. I was really happy that you asked me to do this. It's granted, if you asked me a year ago, Carter, where do you see yourself a year from now? I don't even know what you took, but I don't care, because we're going to do this thing. If you ask me, like, you know, Carter, what do you see your job looking like a year from now? More or less what I'm doing, like, yeah, this checks out, like directing, engineering efforts, you know, coordinating with product, coding once a month for a couple of hours each, but also playing crappy video games and talking to people about, you know, the meta around engineering on a live stream every couple of weeks and like getting people from outside the company to come in and talk on that. I did not ever see that in like my cards. And I'm so glad that like you threw that idea to me, because it's been a blast. Like, bluntly, it's also been extremely helpful on the recruiting side for us, at least just like as a manager. Like, I'm always looking for ways to like show people like, hey, we actually have like a pretty special organization here. Like, we have a cool team. awesome products, great people to work with. If you could just kind of see a little bit what it's like to work with us, then I think you'd be sold. And it's actually been incredibly powerful being able to route people back and be like, oh, you want to know what it's like to work with Phil or Austin or Charlie? Like, hey, we actually played games with them for like 30 minutes and chatted with them about it. If you want to know, you know, what these people are like.
So it's funny, you know, one of the things that I remember when I first joined, so I've been at Jupiter One now for 2 years, which you actually are one of the few people that have me beat here. I think you, I'm employee 20 or 22 and you're definitely below that. Four?
I might be engineer like number four.
Okay. Okay. That's your weird flex.
That is my weird flex. It was like pretty early.
But one of the things I remember when I first started was I would come into the office, because I actually came into HQ, and play Super Smash Brothers against Austin and Charlie all the time. And Isaac, we would play four player Super Smash Brothers every day for like a half an hour at the end of the day. It's one of the things that I actually wish I had more time to do, because
it's
just that camaraderie that comes with gaming. So let me ask you a question. I want to go back into your background a little bit.
Please.
How long have you been in engineering? How did you get started? And what made you choose to be an engineer?
How long have I been in engineering? Tough to measure. I worked full-time during school, but I don't typically count outside of school as like years experience. So we'll say like 7 or 8-ish years. Somewhere in there. But like a lot of that's been working double time, where I've worked I worked for Domo, one of our customers, for a while. But like while I was like also doing full time, up until recently when Urkong kind of put his hand on my shoulder, like, Carter, Jupiter One is your only company now. I also had a gig on the side where I do nights and weekends moonlighting, kind of making apps and websites for people. And I actually attribute that to a lot of like my career progression and like being able to do stuff. Is like I was working two jobs as an engineer for most of my career.
Wow.
I loved that. That was, please, we need more people to crowdsource. I'm going to get crushed. I don't even know that I'm going to get crushed.
See, I'm watching the game shape up. You're going to get crushed.
Where are my pieces going?
We're even right now. You're okay.
Okay. So I did a lot of the moonlighting on the side of doing that. And that was actually super influential with like how my life and career shaped together. How I got into it, I was actually originally a music major at a little party school in the central Utah area with like, my high school was bigger. It was called Snow College. Was down there. I loved it. It was a blast and I learned nothing. And my roommates and I would just like sit and like play music like all day. And it was the dream, honestly. And then I kind of was like, I took like an Excel automation class and I was like, whoa, VBScript is the coolest thing since, I don't know, since
I have to say that statement, I don't think I've ever heard said publicly before. VBScript is the coolest thing. Like that's sacrilege. Who likes VBScript? You had to be like
the uninitiated.
You also like banging your face onto a brick wall.
I mean, you know, we won't go into what I do. We already determined like we're not going to talk about my weird tastes on the show. But needless to say, as a result, you know, Jupiter One's tech stack is completely built on VBScript now.
There you go. Yeah, that's really exactly like what we built it on.
That is a lie. If you're watching this, we don't use VBScript. We use TypeScript and Kotlin a little bit. But
so you, for whatever reason, and I'll let you make a move here while I'm talking, but for whatever reason, you fell in love with VBScript, fell in love with coding, and decided that was going to be your future. Which is pretty wild, because I think the first time I saw VBScript, I pretty much screamed and ran as fast as I could from the keyboard. But again, you got to understand, you grew up in the Hannah Montana era. I grew up in the Flintstones era.
I was the one that suggested the Flintstones crossover episode, though. I'm too young to get the Flintstones references, but too old to really appreciate Hannah Montana for what she was.
Anyways, now you're at Jupiter One, and you're coding a security system, a security platform, right? A security data platform, even structural security data platform. Did you have any security background when you came in? Do you need security background to be an engineer? Does it help? And then the last question, because I'm going to feed this into that, the whole stereotypical, why do devs hate security AppSec people? Like that line of questions. Did you know any security coming in?
I had an interest in cybersecurity. I shifted degrees from music to being information systems. I went through and did an undergrad and graduate degree in that flex. As I was going through that, we had like a whole portion dedicated to cybersecurity. I was like, this is what I really want to do. And like, we went into it, and the teacher for that class was awesome. So the extent of my cybersecurity experience comes from essentially playing virtual capture the flag, where every team in the class had a server they had to protect. And then every server had a flag on it. You had to hack in and try and steal.
Yeah.
And we destroyed in that. I got all sorts of things set up to like shut people's computers down so they couldn't, you know, defend themselves. We'd steal all the flags and then spin up new stuff and we do it. So that was the extent of like my interest in security, though. Like, actually, like, since professionally, like, I have zero experience with it. Answering one of your other questions of like, I think you asked, like, do I need to have security experience to come in and succeed? Is that question you asked?
Yeah, I mean, and not just you in particular. I'm talking about in general.
An engineer on the team, though.
A dev. Like, if you hired a dev, do you require them to understand how SQL injections work or cross-site scriptings, or, you know, have any idea how to defend against those things in an AppSec background? Yeah. And you know, you don't necessarily have to write code. Right. It helps, right? But is that something you tend to train them, like, or how does the relationship between the developer and the AppSec process work for you guys?
Yeah, I love that question. Because like, yeah, for all intents and purposes, like, AppSec, I had zero experience. And maybe I'm not an optimal candidate, and maybe that's why I'm not in engineering anymore and not management. Food for thought, huh? But is it my turn? No, it's
your turn. It is your turn. Yeah, I just took your bishop and you lost it with no points back.
Oh, it is my turn. Oh, and am I in check? I must
know. You're not in check.
Yeah, why can't I move my piece? I just don't know how to play chess. That's what's going on here. All right. So
come on, crowdsource this boy some help.
I know. I'm looking in the chat for help, and I'm being left hung out to dry here. Y'all are brutal, ruthless people. No, I'd say you don't need AppSec experience to succeed on the team, specifically on my team. So we work on the user interface and the first layer of backend services that we talk to. So I would say what does help on my team is like general SaaS platform experience. Understanding, you know, kind of the concepts of like multi-tenancy and even at like a very high level, but what it feels like to use a good web application, things like, oh, maybe I should be able to do this, have personal settings or personal alerts. This feels like the right way I would want to use this. Those kinds of like intuitions really, really help. And then thankfully, I would say like our products team needs to be really dialed into having experience working in the AppSec space. As far as like actual security and stuff like that, I lean very heavily on the security team. You also asked a question like, do devs hate security, or why do they? Like,
so I'll provide color about that. Please. I'm a old school AppSec guy. I've been doing AppSec since 2000. So 20
years. You weren't always in marketing?
What's that?
You weren't always in marketing?
I was not always in marketing. No,
okay, I was actually
an offensive security guy for the first half of my career. Computer
I
science.
I borderline don't believe you.
Hey, you weird flexed one grad degree. I'll weird flex two of them. How's that?
Did you get a degree in marketing as well?
I have an MBA and a master's in computer science. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm a double nerd.
Wow.
Andrew. But no, so going back in time, back when I did the AppSec, you know, when I was an offensive security AppSec kind of guy, you know, it was always this application security is a department of no, you know, we just put hurdles in everything in the development lifecycle. Application security is a pain in the developer's ass, right? And I feel like over time, the concept of application security being the blocker to success has somewhat faded away, right? It has turned into more of a, let's let the engineers figure out how to do it the correct way right from the get-go. And so that's kind of what I think I meant by like the annoying relationship that can come sometimes between AppSec people or security people in general and developers is
It's
centered on the, oh, we need security. And then they tend to do it all too late, right? They tend to do it way late in the game after the code's done. You're trying to push it to prod and security goes, wait. All the shit's broken. You can't do this. You can't put this out in production. Rewind, take another month of development to fix all the security bugs you put in there. And then you guys can put it out to production, right? But that, I feel like that was an ancient paradigm. Do you think when you talk to developers now that paradigm still exists? Or are we getting to the point where it's like, hey, security needs to be baked in. We're going to do it the right way. We're going to do it during the dev cycle and not in the, you know, push to prod. And I know this is like a question. Maybe you haven't seen enough other orgs to know, but maybe I need to come on your show and ask some developers this.
Please. Yeah. No, I think that's a really, really good big question. I would say it's definitely somewhere in between those two ends of the spectrum where we don't have security, like convenient, you know, ideally in my world, like having security is like having a good, like, I don't know, like a good tenant or a good roommate that like, you just like, you don't hear from them. And if you don't hear from them, that's actually really good.
that's typical what people think of security for sure.
Yeah. So we don't actually include them super thoroughly in like most of the things that we're working on, like a high level. The points where we do include them is like architecture design on like some of our more sensitive backend services. Or
so you're moving left, you're shifting left.
Yeah. To use the common phrase, yes.
But do you think that's what most engineering groups across the planet are doing today? Or are we still?
I would say like most engineering groups with like a team less than or equal to like 100 people, 50 people maybe. Mm-hmm. I think as you certainly get like more corporate and like bigger, when you start having like, you know, if you go public, you have a very different surface area that you need to like protect. Then security is going to be a lot more attentive and respected, I think. Not respected, but like they have a lot more pressure, I guess, to make sure everything is spotless in your time, which is really hard.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
It's a tough one, but it's your turn.
Okay, yeah. But no, I think, Kenneth, if you're watching this, I know we have, Kenneth is on our security team. He's awesome. We have a great security team here at Jupiter 1 BI.
We have an amazing security team at Jupiter 1, for sure.
And I think one of the things that we're working on right now is trying to figure out, like, when security, like, sees something that's, like, not critical, but, like, hey, this could be improved, what, you know, how do we get that prioritized with our dev work? If it's like, this isn't critical, but it could be better, to me, it's like, well, okay, here's all these things that Urcom, you know, CEO asked for. These are critical from mm-hmm. his perspective. So figuring out how to like slot them in where they do eventually get done and we show like, hey, we do respect you guys when you make the noise for us to do something like once a quarter is surprisingly difficult. It takes a lot of coordination and like effort with like product and like self-awareness to be okay. Being like, I don't understand the value of this, but that's because I'm not a security expert. So I'm going to trust you guys.
Right. You have a music background.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah. Like I screw it. Let's go. Let's do a full motion video here.
Whoa!
Very similar wall. I got a couple missing over there. Cause they're in my bedroom or wherever. I even got a little ukulele down there.
What?
Yeah. So,
we're not going to do this on, we're not going to do this live, but I want you to walk me through that at another point in time.
For sure. Yeah. I'll show you. I mean, they're all cheapos. They're all not that expensive.
I'm interested in the hardware down there. The guitars are cool, but your pedals and like the tech down there. I was like, I actually don't
use it much.
Okay, if you're playing by yourself in your house, you don't really. I've got floor pod and I don't really use that, but electric guitar.
We're both musicians. You started playing young?
Nah, I mean, yes, I started when I was like 15.
That's young, because I started when I was 35.
Oh, really?
Yeah, started playing when I was 35, taught myself guitar, drums, piano now. Playing a bunch of stuff. Do you think people with a music background are predisposed and have it easier or have a easier time? Sorry, that was just might have been a very interesting move. Have an easier time shifting into computer science, into development. Have you found any correlation between music and development? Because it seems to me when I talk to developers, a lot of them have played or are musicians.
A lot of them have, and a lot of them haven't as well. I'd say Jupiter 1 is actually kind of an anomaly in that regard, where like, I don't think we have a ton here. I've worked at other places where we have. That's an interesting question. I'm trying to decide like which thread I want to go down. Yes, I think it affects it.
Do you think it takes a certain kind of mind? Like engineering style mind that likes music as well. So that's
exclusive to say it takes a certain kind of mind. I would say like engineers with more of like a creative background or like a creative aptitude code or solve problems maybe differently than people with a more academic or rigorous background, like more a mathematic background.
That's super interesting. And that's one of the things we press on at Cyber Therapy is like the creative, the why, the human side of what makes security people security people. And we try to dig
unpack this.
Let's unpack this.
Let's unpack this.
That's totally an Ashley thing.
I watch.
You do watch. Clearly, you're a P1 viewer, priority one. I've always found that interesting. It's like people that are predisposed to music, I've found, are predisposed to engineering disciplines. Maybe not, development or computer science per se, but predisposed to engineering disciplines. And I think there's been public research done at an academic level to back that statement up. And I always wonder, because I've always said I'm not a creative person. I've always claimed, I'm not very creative.
Says the man with like 20 guitars.
Well, that's where I'm going with that. And then one day in my 30s, I'm like, I want to learn how to be creative, right? Like, I want to be creative. What can I do to be creative? So I started playing music and I started teaching myself music. And okay, I still am not very good at creating music, but I can play others' music. But it kind of makes you realize what creativity is when you're a musician. Yeah. And then you can apply that to other things like development and design. And, even in the security realm, I think some of the more cutting edge techniques for binary manipulation and using trampolines to bounce off of specific code chunks inside of a PE binary. Like when you're getting really
off my head and pretend like I know what the trampolines and security.
When you get into that stuff, it takes super creative ideation to do exploits. Right. But it's funny. I never thought I was a creative person until I was in my mid 30s. And I started playing music to learn what creativity really was.
Had an
interesting ride. Deep thoughts with Tyler.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think for me, I've been playing guitar for a while now. And I feel like I've gotten like decent at it. Like I won't say I've mastered the guitar, but I am adept with it. Like I can hold my own and play it. I understand the instrument. I think the big thing that learning an instrument and like trying to master it has given me in regards to my professional life is, I don't even know why you did that, but you know what? We're gonna sell the Buick here. So the big thing that practicing guitar and like, I want to learn a really hard song has given me is the understanding of how to develop skill. Or how to develop or like tackle big problems that feel insurmountable to me.
That's
you
cool.
Do over and over and over, you start off as slow as possible and you master it at that difficulty. And then you slowly turn it up. And if you do that, you can eventually play it over you want as fast as you want.
Yeah.
Give enough time and patience. That has impacted the way I approach problem solving in my career tenfold. Of like, it's okay that I don't understand how to do this perfectly right now. I will take a note of this, and this is something I want to make sure that I practice and do. Yeah. And that's where my moonlighting came into play a lot as well. Of like, I wanted to learn how to create a SaaS app from scratch. And so I will do it by myself for this person who wants me to recreate Facebook for them. Spoilers, if you haven't heard of it, it's because it failed. But I'm not a product manager. I just made their crappy idea. That's the big thing that music gave me on the – on the creative side, like if I sit down, that's a muscle that you learn and develop as well. And I'm working on that, but like I can't sit down and just be like, let's write a song now. Like that's really hard for me.
It's miserably difficult. I've tried many, many times.
It takes practice. Like it's a skill to develop, right? Not something that you're just born with.
Absolutely. So part of my strategy for this chess game was to get you on this live stream and then talk to you so much that you had zero focus on your game. And I think it's kind of unfair. So let's flip the tables and let you come up with some questions for me at this point.
Oh, but
so
you know, here's
so
the thing.
In the back half of the game, you actually stand a chance. And those are my dogs being loud. I apologize if you can hear them.
They're cheering for me. So here's the thing, though. Like, my play style will not change at all because my play style is wantonly play unexpected and do stuff that you would not expect because it doesn't make sense. So let's keep calm and carry on here. Let's talk about your background though. Tyler Shields, the accidental CMO. How did you end up as a chief marketing officer? Well, actually, I'm not ready to talk about that yet. Let's wrap up. Let's put a bow on this music side of things. What type of
same music.
What type of guitars, instruments, what do you prefer?
That's a good question. So I started by playing drums first. And actually, funny, because we're gaming, I actually got hooked on drums because of that stupid game Rock Band.
That game rocked. What are you talking about?
Well, it's a stupid game because I spent many hours playing that dumb game.
Oh, yeah.
And I beat it on the most difficult, the highest difficulty level.
Drums are the one instrument on that game that can translate to real life.
Bingo. That's exactly what, it's literally exactly what happened.
Yep.
And so I bought a full electronic drum kit with, you know, the full set, hi-hat, open, close, the whole nine yards. And there's a game out of Japan. The name of the game, stupid game, is going to escape me now.
Drum Karaoke?
Something DX, like Cyber DX or something like that. Some weird name. But essentially, it was a community-driven version of Rock Band that that people put full songs into for full drum kits. And so that's how I taught myself drums, is I would put my little laptop up on the stand and play like super full kit, hard community driven songs in this game. And so I taught myself drums that way and then started traveling a lot for work. Oh, look at you getting aggressive with that.
I've been aggressive this whole time.
For that rook. Oh man. Shoot. Now I don't know.
Not very good at it.
All right, I'm going to go this way first. Go right there.
Where'd my queen go?
You traded it. You said you were going to sell the Buick, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You didn't realize that when you took mine, I took yours right back.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I knew exactly.
Yeah, sure you did.
That's why we were selling it.
So where was I? Oh, yeah. So I started traveling a lot for a living. Started traveling full time. So I bought myself a travel guitar and said, if I can learn drums, I can learn guitar.
Cool. And
so that's where I switched to guitar. Then I had three friends that had a band and needed a bass player. So they asked me if I wanted to play bass. So I literally bought an acoustic bass so that I could learn it in bed at night because that's when I had the most practice time. And so I would just sit there.
You must have an extremely patient and understanding partner.
Mrs. Yeah, she sleeps pretty deeply. Okay.
Acoustic basses are big too. That's like, that's also a flex. Like, you must have a big bed.
Jesus. That's pretty funny. I'm not going to talk about the size of my bed, but I then bought an electric bass, joined the band, figured out now I play bass a lot, quite, because you have to keep up with the other bandmates, right? Because now you got pressure to actually perform and you're gigging out and doing all that stuff. And then once I got proficient, we have like a couple hundred, 200 or 300 songs on the set list. I got proficient at actually not memorizing any of them. What I ended up doing was learning how to sight read tab.
Oh, interesting.
So now, for those that don't know, anyone on the stream that doesn't understand music, tablature is a numerical system of basically showing you the notes of a song. And I got to the point where I could pretty much, you could put a song in front of me, give me about 2 minutes. Okay, I got it. Like, so bass is done for me for now. I don't really want to ever be, you know, Les Claypool from Primus, or like, I don't want to learn how to do that crazy slapping technique. I just want to be able to play in the band. And so now I've decided to teach myself piano. So I've kind of hit all of them. But the thing that I pick up more than anything else, 100%, is the acoustic guitar. Just because it sounds pretty. I can sing my wife to sleep, even though I'm horrible at it. She likes to listen to me sing sometimes. And it's just a day-to-day relaxation, I think, almost trance-type thing for me at times.
Data I have on Tyler's bed is big enough to fit an acoustic bass, but small enough that his wife can still hear him sing her to sleep. So we've got a range here.
You're getting so much information out of me. This is never going to, like, I'm never going to hear the end of this. If people go listen to this, it's going to be, people are going to tweet me like, dude, show me the size of your bass.
I'm going to stop. I won't give you guys something that you have to redact in this episode. I'm sorry. It's not going to get me this time. So you know, mid-30s, was this shift into kind of your creative flowering? You're blossoming into a creative Tyler. is that associated with also when Tyler shifted out of kind of cybersecurity engineering side into marketing? Is there a correlation?
I'm just trying to think of the timeline right now. So I switched. So I did the first half of my career from the late 90s. I was in the .com world in the late 90s and went gosh, I moved to Silicon Valley in 97, did a dot-com startup, was doing all like security and computer science-y research, joined a consulting firm called AtStake in the early 2000s, and then burned out. I burned out is what happened in about 2010. I burned out and was like, I just don't like coding full-time. I don't like just sitting around and banging out, you know, exploits or, you know, those kinds of things. And so decided to make just a career shift. I had already done master's in computer science, was really, really nerdy, really, really nerdy, like hardcore bit assembly language code, like all the way down. And just decided I was burned out on it. I didn't like that research anymore. So I switched over. I wanted to learn everything I could about business and how to build a business, and how to become an entrepreneur. So to do that, I joined Forrester Research in 2012, I think. After I finished my MBA, I joined Forrester Research. And that's about, that would put me at 2012. That would put me right in my low mid 30s. So yeah, almost to a T, which I never thought about it that way. But yes, it was kind of like I was looking for some kind of ways of getting creative expression out.
I think we just did some cyber therapy.
We 100% unpacked that. There's absolutely no doubt that we unpacked that.
Yeah.
So that is exactly
super nerdy. Exactly.
Oh, you're gonna dig that out. That's me in 99 when I won. So you were talking earlier about capture the flag competitions.
Yeah.
That's when I won the black hat competition, was that year.
Oh, I thought you were at like a rave or a club or something like that. I was like, Tyler looks pretty cool. So super nerdy Tyler. That's
when I won the DEFCON capture the flag at the big conference.
That's sweet. That's just badass. So
yeah, weird flex again. I got all sorts of weird flexes.
That's like a cool flex. We'll say that one's fair.
Does it make it a weird flex if I say I won it 2 years in a row?
No, that's also badass. That's irrelevant. It's not a weird flex.
How about, does it make it really stupid if I tell you that I actually have the black badge that gets me into DEF CON for free for the rest of my life and lost it?
No, really?
Yeah, I had two of them and lost them both.
That is wild. I didn't know that existed. That sounds like something out of like myth or legend. No,
if some person
on the street has this incredibly valuable thing where they can go to this every year and they don't
get a dump somewhere or something. But if you win the capture the flag competition at DEF CON, you got a black badge, which got you free entrance for life.
That's cool.
I don't know. I lost them.
We'll call that just that's a fair play flex, not a weird flex. FPF.
I like it.
That's interesting though. I was surprised. I remember when I was out in Raleigh, you know, this is like maybe after you started a couple of years ago, like, I made some like technical joke or something like that, and you riffed right off of it as if you had been on an engineering team once. And it was kind of like, that was suspicious. It all comes together now though.
It does all come together. Yes.
So that's interesting. I have a note on here. So how did you get so good at chess? Shouldn't you be doing work stuff instead of playing video games? I wrote this down, and your first thing that you said was, considering I'm in 30 tournaments right now as we speak, .. We'll call that one a weird flex, though.
That is a weird flex. I'm just like music. I'm OCD almost to a degree when it comes to, like, I dive in and go deep on whatever I do. And so I've been a member at chess.com for, I don't know, probably like 12, 13 years. I'd have to look, but it's
I haven't been around that long.
It's in the double digits. I've been paying these guys monthly for that long, as a member.
Tyler has enough money to pay for chess.com.
Yeah, $4.99 a month, $4.99 a month for 15 years or whatever it's been. I just decided one day I wanted to learn to play chess really well. And so started studying. Now, mind you, I'm not any good. Like, trust me, anybody that's decent is going to have higher than a 1400 daily rating. But
those of us here in the Wood League are just trying to hang on, okay?
Yeah, you're sitting on your 800 daily rating going, oh my gosh, and you're already down eight material points, so you're kind of in trouble. But oh, thank you host for determining that I spent $900 on chess over the past 15 years. Somebody did some quick math with a calculator there. I like that.
That was me.
That was you. Oh, yeah, I didn't know.
I don't want to brag, but I can do math.
All right, there, smart Alec. No, I you know where I find the time, and this is a sad problem.
Please.
That we need to unpack with cyber therapy. I find the time by because I'm a horrible insomniac, and I don't sleep. So I usually play about 20 to 30 moves a night in the middle of the night when I wake up and can't sleep.
Wow.
Yeah. So
at least you have your big bed to lay out on.
When you have 20 to 30 games going at a time and, you know, 2 to 3 days to play each game, you do 20 to 30 moves a night and you just keep it moving along.
I'm going to resist the urge to further explore the intricacies of your insomnia, because I think there's some stuff to unpack there that I think we can solve. And
trust me, I already know how to solve it, but
we can't, I just thought it'd be presumptuous. Let me have that.
We're not going to get into it on this game.
We can fix you, Tyler.
No, I am far from fixing. Okay. I have a question for you.
Please. Yeah.
Why is it Hesto 2 or Hesto 22?
So if you go on to Twitter and look up, so Hesto 2 is my gamer tag. My father's nickname is Hesto. They didn't have video games back then. Okay. So it was not a gamer tag. It was just his nickname because Hesterman. So they call him Hesto. Actually my grandpa was a radio announcer and he was Big Daddy Hesto or something, which today.
Welcome to WNCC. This is Big Daddy Hesto coming up on the radio. That guy?
Pretty much. That's awesome. Yeah. You got the voice scarily close. Like, Dad?
Other things but, we will not be on.
Anyway, so Hesto 2, I started saying, my middle brother got the family name, but I can show Dad that I'm still taking on the family name as the oldest child. I'll just be Hesto 2. So pay attention to me, Dad. Hesto 22 on Twitter, though, is because Hesto 2 was already taken by some dude who posted once in like 2013 or something. I'm still bitter about it. How did you get TXS? You have TXS, though. That is more interesting.
So I do, but Hesto is taken?
Hesto 2 is taken.
And that's what you would want if you could have anything?
Yeah. Okay. Let me add further color to this by saying my wife's tag now is Mrs. Hesto 2. And my daughter, we have already reserved the tag Hesto 2.1.
2.1. I was going to guess Hesto 3, but either way.
No, Hesto 3 is my brother. Hesto 4 is my other brother.
Are you for real? All those on Twitter?
I actually started, yeah. Oh, it's great. We log on and play Halo, and people are like, you got killed by Hesto. Dot, dot, dot. We're like, who the hell are you people? Mrs. Hesto 2, Mrs. Hesto 3.
That's too funny.
It's actually
That's too funny. You're up on the game. You got to make your move.
Okay. Tell us about TXS, though. Were you like, Twitter's out? Yes. All right. Let's get – I got my initials because three letter tags are pretty
– I've been offered lots of money for it, actually.
Really?
Because, you know, people – well, there's a good and a bad to having that tag. I've been offered a lot of money for it because it's three letters, and the shorter the tag, obviously, in Twitter, the better off you are because you get more characters in, right? So you have extra space to type things, so people like the short ones. But I actually was originally TXS2. So TXS are my initials. And I was TXS2 because somebody already had TXS, much like you, and was just squatting and not doing anything with it.
Very tasteful.
So what I did, and this was in probably 2010 timeframe, something like that. You know, Twitter had been out a few years. It wasn't huge yet. It was big, but it was big in the cybersecurity world, but it wasn't enormous. You almost tricked me there. Dirty, dirty man. What I did was I filed a trademark violation with Twitter because at the time I was doing all sorts of public facing cybersecurity research, speaking on the lecture circuit. I was like speaking probably like 15 plus conferences a year for the research I had been doing on rootkit detection. And so I said, I want that. It's idle. Nobody's using it. I want TXS. And they sent back, you have to prove a trademark or a copyright. And so I actually sent them links to every speaking engagement I was doing and said that I deserved to have it. And it was idle. And they like literally one day they sent me an email like, here's the password, log in and change it. And I don't think they do that anymore. I don't think it's allowed, but somebody decided that was
password for everything else, I heart so-and-so.
So somebody decided I had enough clout to demand TXS. And this was before they were doing blue checks.
Wow.
And they gave it to me out of the blue. And I was like, done, lock it up. That's mine. So that's how I got the Twitter handle.
That is crazy. I just need to build a whole brand around Hesto too now, right? And that is...
You do.
I was hoping that I was going to get something that was actually feasible here, though. We're going to rebrand 100X and 100X Engineering to Happy Hour with Hesto 2.
I love it.
There we go.
I love it.
Hesto 2's Happy Hour. I don't know if we're going to be able to wrap this in time. We might just have to call it a draw.
Oh, my gosh. You wish.
Oh, my gosh. I do. Why can't I move my...
Because you're in check.
Oh. Okay, what does it mean to be in check, though? No, that's interesting. Well, now I'm just bitter that I am reminded that I have Hesto 22 as my Twitter handle. I even have it on my door to my office down here. That's a flex to everybody that comes to my house. Carter has a plaque.
We may not be able to finish this game. You're absolutely right there.
Yes, we will. Here comes nail in the coffin.
Oh, sugar. I forgot what I was doing over there. I can't believe I left that open for you.
You left it open on purpose. But
no, I didn't. No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
I swear to God, I did not leave that open on purpose. Although I did have that.
I was hoping you wouldn't. I realized I was like, there was a reason I didn't do that. I can't remember why.
And to be honest with you, I forgot you were even coming down that rank. It's hard to play while you're having a conversation. It really is.
It truly is. Where is your piece that is making it so I can't move there? Oh, yeah, the damn rook. Okay. Well, you know, we're going to sell the Buick again, but at least I'll get some pieces. Or will we? I don't know. Yeah, we will. It's now is not the time to be feeble. Now is the time to be bold.
Oh, good game, good sir. But you're down 15, I think. You're in deep trouble.
What does it mean
to be down 10? Oh, no, you're down 15.
Well, I put you in check, so I think that means I win.
All right. What other topics? What is your favorite video game? And what is your favorite song to play on guitar? Two questions.
Oh, great questions. Both of them are excellent, and it's like asking me to pick my favorite child, which I only have one, so it's easy. Favorite video game. Actually, that's hard. Damn it. Favorite song. I love Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses.
Can you play it?
Huh?
Can you play it?
End to end, flawlessly.
Okay, we're not going to do this live, but I want to Zoom with you and hear that, because that's going to be amazing.
I hum Sweet Child of Mine to my daughter every night before she goes to bed. It started out as a joke, humming Guns N' Roses as a lullaby, but we're here for it. So yeah, Sweet Child of Mine's my favorite. I liked it before it came out on Guitar Hero 2. And then...
Little known story, I used to hum The Gambler by Kenny Rogers to my kids I used to sing The Gambler to my kids to put them to sleep.
I love that. You gotta do something to keep it fun.
Absolutely.
For parents. And then favorite game? I would say Rainbow Six Siege circa 2015 was like my favorite game I ever played.
Were you ever an MMO guy?
I've gone through my MMO phases. I've played my fair share of RuneScape in the day.
Oh, those are new MMOs compared to what I played.
Oh, what did you play?
Dude, I was an EverQuest kid in a World of Warcraft when it came out, the year it came out.
Okay. RuneScape predates World of Warcraft.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Today I learned. I was today years old when I learned.
Okay, let me fact check myself. RuneScape release date. January 4th, 2001. Wow, release date. November 3rd, 2004. So,
wow. Okay, when did EverQuest come out? That was like 96.
Oh, okay. EverQuest predates RuneScape by 2 years.
Wait, is it like 99?
It was 99.
Okay, because I remember playing it when I lived in Silicon Valley, so I know it had to be at least earlier than 01.
Congratulations, you predated a 14-year-old by...
Yeah, the scary thing is you were 14. You had an excuse. I was 20-something.
Playing it in my computer tech class at Albion Middle School with everyone else, though. It was a good time, special time.
Hey, if that's what you want to tell yourself, bud.
It is, yeah. I can get away with it. Some of us were 14, so, you know. I have to take what I can get, though, because
And I'll tell you what you are going to get is a loss on this game.
I am going to get served.
It is impossible for you to win, my friend.
Well,
no matter how poorly I play, you will not.
It's not about winning or losing. It's about staying in the Wood League with my homies. Chess hits differently down here in the Wood League.
All right. It is 3 minutes to the top of the hour. Do you have any other last minute questions we want to do here?
Yeah. I like to end my stream by asking our guest to say something profound.
Oh, you're kidding me. You're gonna hit me with a closing question on my own show?
I was gonna say something profound. I was asking you to tell me something. No, yes, I would like you to say something profound, please.
All right.
If you need to have a big head Tyler come out, like, I'm good with that.
I'll let you scoop that question because you didn't go through all of the really difficult questions that we had talked about in our prep material. So I'll let you scoop that question. Something profound, huh?
Something profound. I want you to take that one. Please get the big head Tyler.
Big head Tyler. This is a big head Tyler moment. You don't really realize how big head is until you put him next to your real face and you're like, holy crap.
I didn't realize how far away your wall was.
Yeah, big head is enormous. No, you know, I think I have, you know, I'm fairly advanced in age. You know, I'm pushing an older age, and as you get older, you get wiser, I think. And, you know, a lot of things I learned, really, I could probably give you 20 different, like, you know, Tylerisms and things I've learned and things like that. But I think the number one thing I like to tell people that are starting something new or going for something new is it really doesn't matter what you choose to do. It just matters that you're following your passion. Because if I think back to my career, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a hacker. So I'm turned into a hacker. Then I wanted to do it professionally for a living. So I did it. Then I wanted to be an academic. So I went back to school. I turned into an academic. Then I got tired of that. And so let's go into business, right? There's nothing that stops you from being successful no matter what you do, as long as you're enjoying that ride, right? Success will be there. Guaranteed. And so, yeah, I think that's my little word of wisdom. Make sure you're following something that you enjoy doing every day that you can be happy waking up with, and surround yourself with people that you enjoy spending time with. If you do those things, you'll win.
I like that. I think that qualifies as sufficiently profound. Also, a flex.
Sufficiently profound.
You called yourself successful at multiple things. I would agree.
That wasn't the point of it, Hesto.
No, thank you for that. I'm like trying to wiggle in now and be like, can I hijack the host seem like, thank you for joining us for Cyber Therapy.
I think you should close us out.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. I'd love to hijack it. Thank you for joining us for Cyber Therapy. This has been Hesto 2 coming at you with a live stream here on YouTube today and LinkedIn and Twitch. Don't forget to smash the like and subscribe button, hit the bell. We'll leave some links up here or over here, whatever the people do in YouTube.
Challenge me on chess.com, TXS. I'll accept all challenges just for fun.
All challenges for people ranked over 1338. So don't. Feel
apparently excited. That is true. Maybe I'll turn that switch off. We'll
if you're looking for somebody to challenge that you can beat, I will ignore.
I will even give you. I really loved this conversation today, Hesto. I will even give you permission to kick me off the show and then say goodbye. Oh. So go ahead and kick me off into the green room. You have permission to kick me off my own show, and then say goodbye, and we'll turn it off.
This means a lot. See you, dude. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. I do a really bad endearing face. I need to work on that. I wish I could fake cry because I'd be doing it right now. That's a big gift from Tyler. So thank you, Tyler Shields. Thank you for letting me join you guys on Cyber Therapy or 100X Therapy today. Again, don't forget to like and subscribe. Next show is in 2 weeks. I don't remember the date for it, so check your calendars and mark them, and we will talk to you then.